census and will instead order all government agencies to turn over all information they have about citizens, non-citizens, and illegal aliens. AP Sagar Magani.
The president's now keeping the effort in-house, ordering every federal department and agency to provide records about how many citizens and non-citizens are in the country.
We will leave no stone unturned.
While he says it's vital to know how many citizens are here for various reasons, top Senate Democrat Chuck Schumer says it's obvious the president has just one reason.
To intimidate minorities, particularly Latinos.
Democrats argue the GOP simply looking to undercount populations in urban areas where they're typically favored and shift power to more rural Republican strongholds. Sagar Magani at the White House.
U.S. officials reportedly plan to start immigration raids Sunday and are expected to target at least 2,000 undocumented people for whom deportation orders have been issued already. As AP's Rita Foley reports, the operation comes 3 weeks after U.S. President Donald Trump promised to start deporting millions of illegal aliens from the United States. Again, AP's Rita Foley.
The government's targeting those who've been given final orders to leave the country. Acting Citizenship and Immigration Services Director Ken Cuccinelli.
There's approximately 1 million people in this country with removal orders. Of course, that isn't what ICE will go after in this, but that's the pool of people who've been all the way through the due process chain.
The raids are expected in 10 big cities. Activists are circulating information about hotlines that immigrants can call. Rita Foley, Washington.
And you can find more at voanews.com. This is VOA News. A hurricane warning has been issued as Tropical Storm Barry churns its way toward the U.S. Gulf Coast and threatens millions of residents as it could become the first hurricane of the 2019 season. New Orleans Mayor LaToya Cantrell said citizens should be ready for long periods of rain and possible flooding.
We cannot pump our way out of the water levels and the waterfalls that are expected to hit the city of New Orleans. We need you to understand this and, again, be prepared to shelter in place.
As of late Thursday, Barry was about 145 kilometers from the mouth of the Mississippi River with top winds at 65 kilometers per hour and crawling at just 7 kilometers per hour. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards has declared a state of emergency and deployed the National Guard. Mandatory evacuations have been ordered for about 10,000 people living near the stretch of the Mississippi closest to the Gulf. President Trump's nominee for the top military officer of the United States says leaving Afghanistan prematurely would be a strategic mistake, as the U.S. and Taliban are negotiating a potential peace settlement to end nearly two decades of war. Army General Mark Milley, the current Army Chief of Staff and nominee for Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, told lawmakers at a Senate Armed Services Committee nomination hearing Thursday that he would make the best military decision regardless of politics. Senator Angus King asked Milley whether he would be swayed or intimidated by President Trump.
Guess what my next question will be?
Probably the same one you asked me when I was nominated to be the chief. Are you going to be intimidated?
That's the question. What's the answer?
Absolutely not. By no one, ever.
A deal between the U.S. and Taliban has been expected to be centered on a U.S. promise to withdraw foreign troops in exchange for a Taliban pledge not to let Afghanistan be used as a base for terrorism. Britain said Thursday that Iranian military vessels tried to impede the passage of a British oil tanker through the Strait of Hormuz. A British government statement said three Iranian vessels were involved in the incident and that they backed off when they received a verbal warning from a British warship. And the State Department spokeswoman Morgan Ortegas says that the United States stands with Britain in opposing Iranian attempts to interrupt shipping in the Strait of Hormuz.
We will continue to work closely with the United Kingdom and our allies to ensure that the Iranian regime's malign activities do not further disrupt international law, maritime security, or global commerce.
Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps denied Britain's accusation. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning. Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbati in Washington. Today is Friday, July 12th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sudan's ruling military council says it foiled an attempted coup d'etat.
The Sudanese military council, they have announced that they have arrested 12 military officers who are believed to be behind this failed coup attempt.
That's reporter Michael Atit in Khartoum. Algeria's parliament elects an Islamist speaker amid efforts to widen national dialogue. Malawi's ruling party holds a victory parade today, Friday. Majority of Kenyans believe corruption is worsening in their country. And Cameroon fights Boko Haram recruitment with goats and sheep.
The program aims to providing livestock for a basic income in order to stop the Islamist militant group's recruiting tactic.
That's correspondent Moki Edwin Kinzeka in Maroua, Cameroon. And rights activists demand clarification from Tanzania's government about a missing journalist. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sudan's ruling military council announced last night that it stopped an alleged military coup. The announcement by General Jamal Omar came as the military council was having additional talks with Sudan's pro-democracy movement on a power-sharing agreement following the removal of President Omar al-Bashir in April this year. According to reporter Michael Atit in Khartoum, the military says 12 officers and 4 soldiers from the Army and National Intelligence and Security Services were arrested.
Well, James, the failed coup was announced late Thursday night by the Sudanese military council on the Sudan National TV. They have announced that they have arrested 12 military officers who are believed to be behind this failed coup attempt. The head of the security and defense in the military council actually announced on the national TV that 5 of these 12 members are believed to be active military officers.
This development is coming at a time when the ruling military council and the protest movement have been talking to finalize discussions on the formation of a joint military-civilian transitional council. So who might be behind this attempted coup? Somebody probably does not like what's happening.
James, it is very difficult to predict, but obviously the first finger point would go to the former regime that since the ruling council and the protesters' representatives and the political parties are almost reaching to a deal. So the first finger point would probably go to the former regime that they are trying to distract what has been going and the agreement that is expected to be signed between the two sides. Analysts and some people might think the shape of the agreement that is expected between the two parties seems to be not very good on the side of the military council, since the agreement said they should divide the power between the military and the civilians, but this was not the plan they had. They wanted to have, you know, a lion's share in the power since they have sided with the civilians to overthrow the former president, Omar al-Bashir.
So it's safe to say probably that the leaders of the failed coup might be on the side of the military taking more leadership role in the transitional process.
That is also a possibility that people are looking at.
Talking about the agreement, we've been reporting this entire week about the agreement on the verge of being signed. When is it going to be signed?
Okay, as I speak currently, I am at the venue of the talks where there are so many media houses outside here. We are waiting for the two sides. Actually, they are still in the room for the deliberation. This draft agreement is supposed to come and hand over to both sides so that they go over it and point out if there are some amendments to be done on this. But we are yet to know why it is not yet been given and why are they still inside. Probably there are some provisions that they might have not agreed on it. That's why we are still waiting out for the breaking news. Definitely, if they don't do it tonight, tomorrow is Friday here in Sudan, and it is a Muslim-dominated community. I don't know whether they would still do it on Friday, or they might even push it to Sunday, most probably.
Michael, thank you very much again for joining us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you, James.
That's reporter Michael Atit in Sudan's capital, Khartoum. Algerian lawmakers have elected a reputedly moderate Islamist political figure as their new parliament speaker to replace the veteran ruling party loyalist who recently stepped down. Slimane Chiné was elected amid friction between the military and parts of the opposition movement as efforts intensify to widen national dialogue aimed at easing tensions and electing a new president. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
The new Algerian Speaker of Parliament, Slimane Chiné, received a round of applause from lawmakers after expressing his support for both the country's popular uprising and its armed forces. He says that at this critical juncture in the nation's history, he expresses his own support and that of all his colleagues for Algeria's peaceful popular uprising, in addition to expressing support and pride for the nation's armed forces. Chiné, a well-known Islamist politician, is the first person in the country's history to be elected parliament speaker without being a member of the ruling FLN party. The FLN Secretary General, Mohamed Jamaï, told a news conference that both he and his colleagues were willing to support someone from an opposition party in the interest of the country. He says that the FLN has its guiding principles among the most and least important of us, and that all of the party members believe in putting the country above partisan interests and important sounding titles. All we care for, he insists, is the best interest of the country, its stability, and its future. Algeria's interim president, Abdelkader Ben Salah, whose constitutional mandate officially expired on Tuesday, continues to exercise his authority and spoke several days ago about the importance of bringing all main opposition figures to the national dialogue talks, which began on July 6th. He says that dialogue is of the utmost importance since it is no doubt the best way to arrive at a consensual agreement needed to resolve a wide range of differences, especially over holding a presidential election. Ailing President Abdelaziz Bouteflika stepped down at the beginning of April following weeks of heavy pressure from protesters who still gather in the capital and other parts of the country every Friday. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Malawi's ruling Democratic Progressive Party, the DPP, is holding a victory parade today, Friday, in the commercial capital, Blantyre. Homeland Security Minister Nicholas Dawusi, who is also the spokesperson for the ruling party, says the parade is a celebration of the DPP's victory in the May 21st general election. He says the party wants to thank supporters who voted to re-elect President Arthur Peter Mutharika for his second five-year term. But opponents are challenging the results, saying the elections were fraught with voter irregularities and rigging. Homeland Security Minister Nicholas Dawusi spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty about the parade.
Yes, indeed. We are planning to have a big celebration march just to rouse up the people and celebrate that God has blessed us. We have now almost 90 members of parliament. We have a president and we are in government. So we want to thank God by marching and celebrating.
But what about those who are in court saying that the election was rigged and that it was stolen from them? Wouldn't they feel aggrieved by this celebration?
In any case, for your information, the United States State Department, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, had described the just-ended elections as free, fair, and credible, coming from the United States government. Can anybody feel aggrieved with that? I don't think so. So we will be marching to celebrate the victory.
Wouldn't there be a possibility of a clash with those who are kicking against or accusing the chairperson of the Electoral Commission of rigging the election on the DPP's behalf?
No, there'll be none of that, because the, apparently this is the a DPP function, and I don't think there will be a clash. Malawi is bad like this, so I don't think there will be anybody who will behave and do just to confuse things. I don't think so.
What is the significance of this celebration, if I may ask you, Mr. Dawsey?
Extremely significant, because in any political party or in any society, there's a need to celebrate and remind the people of the hard work they have done after we have gone through a very tumultuous and a very tortuous election, competitive election, definitive election, inclusive election. So there is a need for us to come together and celebrate.
Your critics are saying that the reason why President Mutharika seemed not to appear Friday for the celebration is because he knows he genuinely lost the election, according to supporters of the MCP. What is your response to that?
The advantage is that he, as Clinton Hogg once said, I may not like what he said, but I'll defend what I said to death, because those are your personal opinions. So people can have a lot of opinion, but tomorrow we are holding a celebration march.
Nicholas Dawsey is Malawi's Homeland Security Minister. He was speaking with VOA's Peter Clarty. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, July 12th. Daybreak Africa time, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Cameroon has begun distributing thousands of goats and sheep to villagers on its northern border with Nigeria, with the aim of preventing unemployed youth from joining the terrorist group Boko Haram. The hope is that the livestock can provide a basic income to empower thousands of vulnerable families and stop them from joining the extremists who promise jobs. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Maroua in northern Cameroon.
Authorities are distributing thousands of goats and sheep to young Cameroonians in villages along the border with Nigeria. The program aims to providing livestock for a basic income in order to stop the Islamist militant group's recruiting tactics. In the village of Salak, 17-year-old Umar Nafisatu received 4 sheep. Nafisatu says she is looking forward to having baby sheep so she can sell them to pay for her school fees. She is the only one to take care of herself, she says, after her father and mother passed away. Boko Haram fighters killed Nafisatu's parents along with 21 others when they attacked her village in 2017, forcing her to flee. Just a week later, Nafisatu's only sister was killed in a suicide bomb attack in a mosque in Kolofata. Boko Haram had recruited her with promises of a job as a house cleaner, then forced her to carry out the attack. Cameroon's government plans to distribute 60,000 goats and sheep by the end of the year. The Minister of Livestock, known only as Dr. Tiger, says the animals will go to those who have suffered in the fight against Boko Haram.
Il s'agit à travers ces actifs productifs d'aider les familles vulnérables.
He says the initiative is to help families who are vulnerable by providing animals that are fruitful and enable them to have money. They will provide for their basic needs, says Tiger, take care of their families and help to avoid temptations that can jeopardize peace and bring chaos. The Lake Chad Basin Commission, with 8 member nations in the region, including Cameroon, says some areas attacked by Boko Haram have unemployed rates as high as 90%. For some of those villagers, that piece may sound like this. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Maroua, Cameroon.
Majority of Kenyans believe that corruption is worsening in their country and that the government has failed to fight it. According to a report by Transparency International released on Thursday, 2/3 of Kenyans say corruption has increased in the last 12 months. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the report comes at a time when Kenyans when Kenya's Ethics and Anti-Corruption Commission also released its own report showing it has recovered 2 billion shillings worth of assets acquired through corrupt means.
The Transparency International report released during the commemorating of the African Anti-Corruption Day yesterday, Thursday, highlighted Kenya's failure to recover assets acquired through graft. As per the report, 71% of Kenyans say the government is not responding adequately to high rate of corruption in the country. At the same time, Ethics and Anti-Corruption Commission says it has recovered graft proceeds worth 2.7 billion Kenya shillings in the last 4 months. The commission's chief executive officer, Twalib Mubarak, yesterday, Thursday, said that in the past few months, the commission has made tremendous improvement on asset recovery.
In the last 4 months, the commission has recovered stolen assets worth approximately 2.7 billion shillings through ADR, as opposed to an average of 1 billion in the last 5 years.
Transparency International also cited that 45% of Kenyans surveyed reported incidents of bribery in the previous 12 months compared to 35% in 2015. According to the Anti-Corruption Commission's chairperson, Eliud Wabukala, the aim of the anti-graft body is to prioritize high-impact cases, asset recovery, prevention of corruption, and promotion of ethics and standards.
I have never come across a Kenyan who says, I'm corrupt or have participated in corruption. But I've met so many Kenyans who say, those people are corrupt. In fact, when Mr. Twalib arrests people, they all come defending and complaining. So let us begin to change that mindset and own the problem, because the potential to be corrupt is there.
Mr. Twalib Mubarak, however, added that the commission has undertaken proactive investigations aimed at averting losses of public resources.
And then there are about 140 acres of land that belongs to the former Karri, which is known as Karro in Naivasha. And we expect more cases to be resolved under this method.
As per the transparency report, the Kenya police were cited as the leading receivers of bribe, with increasing percentages of citizens saying that they had to bribe in order to access public services such as schools, utilities and public clinics. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jumbo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Human rights defenders in Tanzania are asking the government to clarify the status of missing journalist Azory Gwanda. Earlier this week, a top Tanzania official said Gwanda was dead. Now, a human rights activist says he was told that that is not true. Charles Kombi has details from Dar es Salaam.
In an interview with the BBC, Minister of Foreign Affairs Palmagamba Kabudi was asked to comment on the whereabouts of Azory Gwanda, who has not been seen since November 2017. Kabudi said Gwanda has not only disappeared, he is dead. His statement went viral and became a topic of social media discussion in Tanzania, with some people demanding an explanation of how, when, where Gwanda died. Onesmo Olengurumo, executive director for Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Coalition, says he has been told that Kabudi misspoke.
Muonekana kuonyesha waziri kama kukiri kwamba Azory amepotea.
According to the law, for a missing person to be announced as dead, it takes 5 years. He says they have communicated with Kabudi himself for clarification on the issue. He says the minister assures them that he didn't mean that Azory is dead, but he was trying to say that he is missing. The executive director for the League on Human Rights Center, Anna Henga, says she's disappointed in the minister's statement and says it shows a lack of concern for Gwanda.
He said Azory Gwanda is dead and many people died, by the way, so it seems that it's not an issue to him as a representative of the government. I would recommend the government to continue looking for this person because it's their mandate according to the constitution.
Gwanda is a journalist who was working at Mwananchi Communication, a company that publishes the Citizen newspaper. He wrote a series of articles documenting the murders of local government officials and police officers by an unidentified assailants on motorcycles in the town of Kibiti. He went missing on November 21, 2017. According to a statement from his wife, Gwanda was taken away in a car sitting in between unknown people. Before they left, he told her that he would return shortly, but that was the last day she saw him. no one has claimed responsibility for his abduction. The One Free Press Coalition, a global network of editors and publishers, recently included Gwanda on a list of top 10 violations of press freedom that require global attention. Charles Kombe for VOA News, Dar es Salaam.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with the latest update from the 2019 African Cup of Nations being hosted by Egypt. Tunisia progressed to their first African Cup of Nations semi-final in 15 years on Thursday night after beating debutant and tournament surprise package Madagascar 3-0 in the quarterfinals at the Al Salam Stadium in Cairo. Tunisia will now face off with Senegal in Sunday's semi-final at the June 30 Stadium in Cairo. For the first time in this tournament, Madagascar looked really uncomfortable and were forced to passing mistakes by the high-pressing Tunisians, who seemed to have done their homework on the debutants. Another North African team, Algeria, reached the last four for the first time since 2010 after beating Cote d'Ivoire 4-3 on penalties in their quarterfinal clash on Thursday in Suez. The encounter ended 1-1 after 120 minutes with Turkey-based Sofiane Feghouli scoring in the first half for the Algerians, whilst Jonathan Khadija levelled in the second half. The North African had the luxury of missing a penalty early in the second half when Bagdad Bodija shot at the crossbar but had the last laugh on penalties. Algeria will play Nigeria for a place at the final on Sunday in Cairo. Highlights of the 2019 African Cup of Nations is the 24-team format, but most importantly is the introduction of the VAR, the Video Assistant Referee, to the competition. The Video Assistant Referee system came into effect from the quarterfinal stage, and Liverpool striker and Tarang Alliance Sadio Mane's two goals were disallowed for offside after VAR checks. JJ Okocha wants the VAR to be deployed in a more consistent and transparent manner.
It would have been nicer for us to see VAR in action there. You know, they didn't show it to us, they showed it to the referee. But I think it's important for us to leave the match under our referee's control. You know, we don't have to take his power off him, but it's good to see VAR in Africa.
Africa's billionaires and Nigeria's Aliko Dangote and Femi Otedola have promised to give the Super Eagles of Nigeria $50,000 and $25,000 respectively for each goal scored in the semi-final game against Algeria. Ahead of Sunday's showdown, Dangote and Otedola motivated the Super Eagles with their financial contribution. President of the Nigerian Football Federation, Amaju Pinnick, confirmed the kind gesture from the business moguls at the team's base in Cairo on Thursday.
So for every goal that you score, he wants to score 10 goals, so you get $500,000. If you score one goal, it's $50,000. Femi Otedola too, I called him, the same thing, $25,000 for every goal scored.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Sudan's ruling military council announced last night that it stopped an alleged military coup. The announcement by General Jamal Umar came as the military council was having additional talks with Sudan's pro-democracy movement on a power-sharing government. That's it for this Friday, July 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butt in Washington. Have a good weekend.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Hello there. Today is Friday, July 12th, and this is VOA's